Hello, and welcome to the Monthly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting some of the comics we got this month, a few from DC, a few from Marvel, and a few from some of the other publishers. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. In this monthly comic spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be talking about some of the comics we read in July 2026. James, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing well. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing all right. Doing all right. I actually think I have read more comics for this episode than not only most of the past six this year, but probably about half as much as I've read in all six of those.
Oh, wow.
So I actually got some reading done this time.
Good, good. Hopefully good reading and not just obligated reading.
I wouldn't say it was obligated reading, but I'm also really not sure I would say it was good reading either.
You muscled through some stuff.
I'm noticing a couple of things.
Okay.
One of which is I'm trying to find the end of an arc and pick up there, and I'm failing miserably on some of that. As a result of this, I'm reading a number of issues of one title and then a number of issues of another title, and I'm reading some things out of order.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And these comics aren't letting me know that until, like, I'm deep in the story.
Yeah, that's not good. That's really not good. I had some weird things happen to me, too. I got my last shipment from Cowabunga, which, and it literally came in, I think it was Saturday. So that was August 1st. And I haven't ordered anything from Cowabunga since December. Remember that December order?
October.
Or October. October, that's right, for December. So this is months and months and months. But I got odds and ends, and I got single issues in there, too, that I guess had built up or he was clearing out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm debating, do I read these things, which I kind of just pushed aside, and I won't remember from 10 months ago. And plus, a lot of the titles like Geiger, I was like, oh, I didn't get that issue. Go back and read it. Basically like a time bubble back to this one issue that existed. Just really weird. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I got a shipment from Cowabunga Deep Discount Comics as well. It had the Crisis on Infinite Earths, Absolute.
Yep.
I think it had another trade and then five or six issues.
Yeah, I got that Absolute too, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you get all these weird, I had forgotten I even ordered that, but I did order it. And yeah, so you get these things, you're like, do I read it? Do I not read it? That's where I am.
I'll read it eventually, but that's the sort of thing that I wouldn't have read immediately, even when I was getting weekly shipments.
Yeah, yeah. The Absolute makes a little bit more sense than like the single issues that came out that you ordered 10 months ago, essentially. 10 months is a long time ago.
Yeah, but it does bring up the difference between a reader who is on that current edge of comics, reading the new stuff as it's coming out from week to week to week, and basically reading them as back issues.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I would say this. I read more stuff this time, too. And when I say more stuff, different things. But reading things in chunks as back issues, it's a different experience, and I would say it's probably more enjoyable for the good stuff. For the bad stuff, I don't feel the need to keep reading it. You know, after a couple, let's say, issues, I'm like, this isn't very good. I just move on really quick.
Mm-hmm.
But stuff that's good, it's different.
I can totally understand that aspect. I guess for me, it's not categorically better or worse to be reading in 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 issue chunks than being on the month-to-month. Because on the month-to-month, sometimes it's hard for me to remember where did this title leave off.
Yep.
On the other hand, when I'm picking up some of these things and I've got a 6 or 7 issue run to go through, I almost certainly don't remember where the previous issue to that chunk left off.
Yep.
I'm not always ending in a clean note. And sometimes the ones that I'm reading in sequence work better for me because I've got the flow, the continuity. Other times they don't because I'm noticing, wait a sec, that's not where you left off. I mentioned that last time with, I think it was the Action Comics. Superboy goes to the expo with Pete and Lana the one day. Next issue's picking up, sure seems like on that same day, and the expo's closed that day.
You're like, what? That didn't happen. What's going on?
So that gets a little frustrating. Both are good, but in different ways.
Yeah, both are good, and I'm kind of torn, and I know exactly what you're saying. It seems like the monthly thing that we've had for decades and decades, as long as we've read comics, can work when it's done well, yet I feel like they don't write for that format, So it's almost they slow it down and put it into chunks to let the artist have the ability to come out with issues, to have a life, essentially. Because otherwise, if you were giving the artist, hey, you're going to do this story and it's 300 pages, their life's over for the next 2 years. They're just doing that and that alone. No vacations, no nothing.
They're still doing that. It's just now they're getting paid in the intervening time because the publisher could afford to.
Yeah.
Whereas if they stockpiled it, they couldn't. So it's an economic decision.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's lower risk for them too, because if the first issue doesn't sell, don't do all 300 or whatever pages. But I guess for me, the big problem is all around accessibility and kind of re-accessibility for stories. And I know for certain, when I started reading comics back in the 70s, the 80s, they were writing to where the issue stood on its own.
Yeah.
It may connect to other stuff. It's not like it's always done in one. And people seem to fall into what I consider to be extremist thinking, where if it's not continuing, it must be done in one. And those are the only two possibilities. It's like, no, it can have payoff per issue, but still be a continuing story.
Yeah, true.
But these days, it's not that we're getting a fulfilling issue that is just a sequence in six. It is literally the first part of six, and it's incomplete without the other five.
Okay. Yeah.
And we've talked about the middle chapter syndrome. We've talked about it's all set up, no payoff. We've talked about all of those things.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly still seeing signs of that.
I'm seeing it too. Yeah.
But, I mean, add to that the fact that these are stories that I am reading in one sequence, then another sequence, then another sequence, then another sequence, that in some cases are trying to dovetail at various points.
Yeah. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And I'm of the opinion, just personally, I'm finding I was enjoying more of the indie stuff when I moved to digital. And not that it's different or anything like that. It's just when I was trying to read the new stuff that was coming out from Marvel and DC, whatever it is with Marvel and DC today, I feel like it's not being written for me, but maybe they don't need to be writing it for a 52-year-old guy. I'm the longtime reader, but maybe they're trying to capture an audience of younger readers. I don't know, but I just feel like a lot of the stuff I was reading, I wasn't enjoying.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like when we do back issues. And for current comics, I do like when I can go in there and I was reading Image on Global Comics, which is gone, unfortunately.
Image is gone on Global Comics. Global Comics is still there.
Correct.
Just to
yeah.
clarify.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want anyone hearing that and panicking of what happened to Global.
Wait, I paid for a year.
It's a big blow to Global, though, I think, losing Image that way.
I think that was huge. And I don't think it was by a mistake, and I don't think it was done lightly. I think there was a lot of pushback with the creators inside of Image for that to happen. They were probably saying, hey, you're giving away all our stuff day and date, and we're not making any money on this, and people aren't buying stuff in comic shops. We're not cool with this.
If that was indeed happening, either way, I could see the fear of that being enough to get it cut off at the knees.
Yeah, I don't think it probably was really happening. I think it was, like you said, a fear. But I mean, with all that, I was really kind of enjoying going in there and reading a little bit more mature titles for me. And when I say mature, I'm not talking about rated R, nudity, and stuff like that, but things that are written for a little bit older reader that wasn't written for kids. I don't want to read Devil Dinosaur. I don't want to read Moon Girl. I don't want to read things that skew a little bit younger.
It's not even for me that they skew a little younger sometimes. It's that they skew to a very particular audience that I am not a part of.
Yes, exactly. I feel excluded from a lot of that stuff.
Sometimes I feel blatantly excluded. Other times it's just I am very disinterested in that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, sometimes, I mean, the ones you were talking about, yeah, they're skewing to a much younger age group than we fit in. Probably not necessarily for us, not to say we couldn't enjoy it.
Correct.
But we may be less enticed to try it. Other times, they may gear towards more of a horror fan that I am not, and therefore not for me. Other times, they're going for another demographic that I think they're very pointedly targeting, that I am not part of that group, and therefore, because it seems like they're so clearly going after a certain thing, and it's not me, that I feel like, well, fine, have at it, just don't expect me to be along for the ride.
Yeah. I agree with you there, and I'm noticing it in a lot of things, television, movie, whatever, TV especially, as things get chopped up more and more and smaller segmentation. It used to be when we would watch a show back in the day, it was kind of for everyone. It wasn't a comedy for a 14-year-old. It wasn't a comedy for a 60-year-old. It was a comedy for the whole family when they could get together and watch it.
Yep, yep.
And that's how comics were. They had to be written for a 30 or 40-year-old reader plus a 10-year-old reader. And we just don't have that today. We really don't. Everything's directed towards, I'm a fan of this group and I'm writing towards that. Or, hey, we want to capture this demographic right towards this. And it makes you feel, huh, this isn't the way comics used to feel when it was for everyone. Every comic was for everyone.
And that's part of what I mean by accessibility in terms of, or almost welcomeability, I think is the better term for that. Because when I think accessibility, I do tend to think more, are they introducing the characters? Can I follow the story? Am I getting enough out of this particular installment?
Yeah.
But when you add to that the lack of welcomeability on some titles and some issues, where it's like, man, this isn't a story, it's a soapbox.
I've had that experience, and I know you have too.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm being preached to at this point.
Preached to, yelled at, something.
And it's very weird. It's like an agenda to tell a story sometimes. Sometimes you can see that, and I understand it, but by that very nature, you're kind of alienating it and putting it where only a certain small segment of people can enjoy it, and other people are going to feel like, I'm not included in this. And me, if I was a writer, I'd want to capture everyone if I could. The bigger the audience, the more people that enjoy it, the more money I make as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my mentality. I don't want to exclude anyone.
Same here. Same here.
Yeah, I tell you that with my business. You know, people come in and they want to talk politics or they want to talk this. I try not to, because to me, everyone's money's green. I want you to all come in and be happy. And mm-hmm. I do not want to make anyone feel unwelcome here at all.
I've seen a couple of comic creators tell a story and make some decisions in the telling of it that I feel either blatantly excludes a certain demographic or at least alienates them. And I'm like, why are you taking what is already, I think, a small audience of potential comic buyers and subsetting it down any further?
Yeah, it makes no sense.
I mean, not to say every comic is for everybody, but there are things you can do to make certain comics not for some people.
Exactly. Exactly. So you and I are feeling the same thing. And now that Image has been taken away from me, I'm a little bit sad. It makes me feel like I might dig into some omnibuy or some hardcovers that I haven't touched. And I may check out some other things in Global Comics, because those were kind of like my staples. My go-to was like, oh, the Geigerverse. Oh, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I just have another avenue. I got to go Image and buy it digitally. Or I don't know how you get Image stuff digitally. I'm assuming Image Comics sells there. I'm just assuming. I don't know.
Libraries.
Libraries, yeah. Hoopla. I'll become a Hoopla fan.
Worth looking into.
Yeah, exactly.
I definitely think Image leaving Global Comics makes Global Comics less of a great deal.
Yes.
They already didn't have Dynamite, which is a lot of the indies I was reading. And I am still over on the Marvel app waiting for enough things to accumulate to be worth reading a couple of things.
Yep.
Not that I was reading a bunch of Marvel, but that's why over the first half of the year, the number of Marvel things I've talked about has been next to nothing.
Yeah, me too. I found something on the Marvel app, by the way.
Oh, cool.
And I did read it, but it was the thing I read from Marvel. I'll put it that way. I read one thing.
Yeah.
The thing.
I know I'm more of a DC fan than Marvel and other comics, but historically, my reading was surprisingly even between the three groups.
Oh.
And certainly what I'm reading right now is skewing very heavy DC, because honestly, it's the easiest to get new stuff from.
Yeah, I can see that. It's only a month delay versus a 3 month, and it is easy to get, so it makes sense. I would tell you that Marvel, if you're using your computer, is horrible. The app is a little bit better.
I don't even bother checking the website. I'm using the app, and I'm not happy about that.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah.
All
right, shall we start talking about some comics?
Yeah, let's do that. I started last time, but you want to start this time?
Sure.
All right, go ahead. What's your first thing?
I'm going to start with Superman, specifically issues 34 to 39.
Okay.
This is actually a couple of different story arcs. Actually, really, it's just two. The first two issues were DC KO crossovers.
Okay.
And
DC KO, that's still going on.
Well, no, because this is back from January.
Oh, that's right. Okay, all right. DC KO, all right.
It's already knocked out. I just haven't finished it all. All
right.
Not to say I will, but there are a few other titles that if I'm picking up, I may as well pick up from where I left off.
True.
There are some things these writers are doing where it looks like they set out to tell one story and then kind of don't. Because issue 34 has a thing where it's in the fortress talking about the creation of the Superman robots kind of in this continuity. And I always liked them from pre-crisis. And then it just kind of uses one of them as a plot device, not a character. Like you leaned into that. You didn't go there. And already at this point, Superboy Prime is a main character in this title. I really don't care for him speaking like a stereotypical comic book reader. We can save this whole crossover event just in time for the final issue. And like he's in universe doing that. Yes, it's in character, but it kind of breaks the fourth wall.
Yeah.
And months after the DCKO stuff has ended, it's kind of a little hard for me to kind of get back into the flow of that event. Not that I was all that excited about it when it came out.
Yeah.
So Dispatch didn't get off on a good start with that issue. The next issue tied into it, we get ostensibly Superboy Prime versus Darkseid's Legion. But again, they're chess pieces on the board, not so much characters. I was very surprised to see Lois using some profanity.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm like, really? Or maybe I misread the issue. I don't think I did. We hit a point where Darkseid's Legion just kind of leaves the fight because, sure, why not? We boil the Superman robot down to just like a television projector. Like, he could do that? Okay, why? Who knew? And who cares?
You're like, sure.
And then it ends with Lois introducing the Kents to Superboy Prime.
Ah.
Okay, this is going to be a retread of the Kents raised Superman. Later they raised the Connor Kent Superboy. Now they're going to try it with this, and wackiness will ensue because he's neither of them. We hit the next issue, and it's really not where they pick up.
What?
They pick up with the Justice League not knowing what to do with Superboy Prime. It's like, are we going to do a rehabilitation arc with him? I don't think that's a good idea to begin with. He's got a horrible track record implying he'll fail to redeem himself. And on the off chance he does, isn't he just then another Superman with a chip on his shoulder for not being the quote-unquote real one? So, again, the direction they're heading, I think, is not great. They bring in a villain that even Superboy Prime refers to as a kind of a deep cut or whatever, and it's like Ignition. I don't remember him, and a reference would have been nice. Hell, Superboy Prime even could have done it himself. But meanwhile, it's like, nope, they don't care, so I don't. And we wind up with Superboy Prime getting a job in a comic book store. In this comic book store, DC Comics are being sold in the universe.
Oh, God, that's weird. Okay.
Complete with the original Flash Comics number one having the same creative team as it does in our reality. They have posters in this comic shop. Have you noticed on Justice League and some of the other comics, they've got a version of the character in the upper left corner of the cover right below the DC and the issue number and stuff?
Yeah.
On Justice League Unlimited, it's Wonder Woman and Red Tornado. That poster's up in this comic shop.
Oh my God, that's funny.
So, I mean, this again kind of breaks that fourth wall a little bit. Kind of weird. And the end teases the Ghost of Manchester Black, and it's like, I'm not the least bit excited about that, but that's fine. It'll be a few issues before we get there. We hit 37, Superboy Prime's visiting the Kents in Smallville, which is weird because it sure felt like he was going to be staying there, but he's not. He's working in Metropolis. And we get this thing that Superboy Prime is visiting, quote-unquote, the sites of DC Universe. Like, you know, Crime Alley, because he's a comic fan. This does lead to him interacting with the Damian Wayne Robin, which kind of interesting. And they took a good approach on it of Superboy Prime basically going to him. It's like, hey, you used to be a killer and stuff. People seem to like you now. How'd you swing that? I'm like, yeah, this is a great redemption arc.
That's funny.
We get to the next issue. This time they've brought in Witchfire from Power Company.
Okay.
Which is, again, a fairly, I don't say deep cut, but obscure reference. And
yeah, I didn't get to know it.
I had forgotten about it, and I'd read the stuff. The first time, I didn't read the latest round. I don't think she would have made the cut for that team for various reasons. But it's getting very meta-textual, not only with all the references they've got so far, but Superboy Prime almost seems to get ripped out of the DC Universe into a very blatant comic book page realm. And I don't mean comic book page the podcast. I mean like a page of a comic realm.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's super weird.
Yeah, I don't know why they're doing that.
I don't know, but they've decided he needs a catchphrase. It's prime time.
Oh, God.
So the groaners on this series are pretty high.
Yeah, that sounds like they're trying to make him almost like Deadpool. It's weird.
Almost. Or more like Ghost Spider.
Yeah. Spider-Gwen, yeah.
So the final one of these I read, 39, it's basically Superboy Prime versus Infinite Crisis. Because somehow the Ghost of Manchester Black is somehow making Superboy relive Infinite Crisis. But this time he's not fighting. It's okay. Risk still loses his arm, but this time because he attacks Superboy Prime versus Superboy Prime ripping it off. That doesn't work. And we see Superboy Prime then fighting a ticked off Kal-El, as in Earth 2 Superman. He winds up in the Superman animated series for a little bit and other realities. And it's all to get him to do one of his hypertime punches to change reality. And a specific thing happens. And that's where this leaves off, presumably to wrap up the next issue. And I'm like, I was curious where they were going with Superboy Prime. Kind of cured me of that curiosity.
Ah, so I no longer need to pursue this. That's how you came out of it.
I probably will, because I think it's only one more issue. And it's also, he's enough of a relevant character to the Legion that I at least kind of want to see what they're doing with him.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Cool, cool. So over to me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going with some weird stuff that I know you didn't read. And that's not the reason why I'm picking it. It's because I felt the need to just dig into some different things.
Mm-hmm.
I backed a Kickstarter about a year ago. And this Kickstarter was supposed to come out in February. And it did not. And that was the Heavy Metal Kickstarter. Remember us posting about it on the side channel?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I got my package in July. And kind of what slowed it down, what was interesting is I got 3 of the 4 books. There's mm-hmm. one that's like the cover art, the famous covers from all the heavy metals. And that one, they said, oh, it's shipping at a later date, late from the printer, whatever, or something got damaged, whatever. And I got some metal bookmarks and some other little trinkets, you know, coins and things. But I got 3 of the books and I read one of them and I don't know how to pronounce it. It's spelled R-A-N-X. So I called it Ranks. I don't know how you pronounce it. If it's Ranks, Ranks, Ran-X. But I'm going to call it Ranks. So I'm sorry to anyone who knows the spelling. I don't know what it is, or the pronunciation, I should say. But okay, I never read this before. The original name of the book was Ran, R-A-N, Xerox, like the copy machine.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, why in the hell would it be called Ran Xerox? It's about an android, and he was basically created with leftover Xerox parts for his brain. Which is completely ridiculous, ludicrous.
Yes, yes, it is.
And I'm just like, what? It's a copy machine. It's not intelligent, but whatever they're going with this. This is like the early 80s when Xerox was like a no-no name, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so the android has a bad temper and sexual urges, which makes it even weirder. There was a lawsuit by Xerox, or at least attorneys filed papers, and they sent it to the artist in Italy, or the creator. The creator is Stefano Tamburini. And there was a merger between a British company called Rank, R-A-N-K, and Xerox, Rank Xerox. And so I think they came up with this thing using that name. And the artist, basically, they had it all in there, the letters and things, replied, come and get me.
Yeah.
It's just insane. Insane. But the comic still exists. So I'm assuming nothing came of it. And I think it's because it's very niche. It's like very underground indie, something you would say, okay, this belongs in a heavy metal. And the art starts black and white in the early 80s and progresses to color. It's broken up like 1980 to 81. And then later on, 82, 83, some more issues came out. And so it's broken up in little chunks. And I would say it was okay, but the character had almost, at the very beginning, almost no redeeming traits. None at all. And the opening sequence, I'll tell you the kind of stuff that happens. This kid's sticking out his tongue at Ranks on a subway or the tube in London. And so he punches the kid right in the face. The kid's bleeding all over. I mean, like a little kid. I'm like, yeah. Wow, that's shocking. And then he's in some bar and he kind of starts talking with some guy. And the guy's trying is like very, we don't want any problem here. We don't have any problem here. Cuts off his fingers for no reason. Takes the rings off the fingers, gives them to this character who we meet, Lubna, who's going to be a main character in the book. And she looks like she's small, slim, but she looked like an underage girl. But the way that this plays out, he's giving her these golden rings from this guy's fingers, hands he cut off. They get into some hanky-panky in there. It almost felt like prostitution with an underage. And I was just a weird feeling. I was like, this is bizarre. And then he gets hit in the head with a bicycle chain, which makes his head pop open and you see all the Xerox parts. And he's walking around town like that. And this is like the opening sequence. And I'm just like, there's no redeeming traits here. There's nothing humanizing.
Yeah.
Later on, they try to humanize the character a little bit. They try to build some depth, but it never really works out and comes through. It's more like just watching a train wreck in shock and awe.
Mm-hmm.
All that said, it was okay. I just had no expectations going to it. I was like, man, if you're into like dark and like underground comics type thing, this is really cool. If you're not looking for that, this is very off-putting. So,
yeah, I would have found it off-putting, and I probably would have gone back to the Kickstarter to see if they had indicated this sort of content was going to be in the book.
Yeah, I was buying it mostly for the Serpieri di Druna. I don't know if you've heard of that. He's an Italian artist.
I think you had mentioned the Kickstarter back when you first backed it. So
yeah,
I think you mentioned it then.
That was very racy stuff. So I bought it because I was like, oh, I remember this and I loved it. Oh, that was great. But these other things, I was just like, I'll buy the package. It looks good. But heavy metal, you're going to get like NC-17 type material, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's part of the brand.
Yeah, you got to go into it realizing there's going to be cursing. There's going to be nudity. There's going to be violence. And so I went into it with that. But it was also like just no redeeming traits. I felt like they're trying to do like a play on Frankenstein, turn him into almost like the creature, and the girl was like the humanized, but the girl had no redeeming good qualities either. She was as bad or worse than the android. So it was really weird. It was very, wow.
So was this comic book length? Was this a trade? What?
They're books. So it was a hardcover book, and it had about 100, this one had about 160 pages.
Interesting.
That in heavy metal, they tend to do an anthology. And so I'm imagining it was probably anywhere from 16 to 20 page chunks when it came out. And there'd be like little dividers in there. So you could kind of tell where one went to the other. And then he left the title and he came back a year later with some more stuff that was going on with the character. But it was just really weird. And you know the stuff that I read, John. So it made me feel weird reading it.
Yeah, if it made you feel weird, I mean, just from your description, it's something I wouldn't have touched with a 10-foot pole. It's just not for me.
Yeah, it's not for most people, I would say.
Yeah.
But hey, I read something different, so
that
I did that.
Different.
Yes. I steered you away from something that not that you would have ever gone down that path.
Yeah. You saved me from jumping off the cliff I wasn't even going near, so thank you.
You're welcome. All right, what's your number two?
All right, my next one, and this is following up with the Reign of the Superboys stuff, is I went through Superman Unlimited 9 through 14.
Oh, okay. A lot of Superman.
Yeah, a lot of Superman stuff. The first issue of this, it starts in a bar. We've got Vicki Vale from Gotham, who's in Metropolis. She's having drinks with Jack Ryder, I think Steve Lombard, although he's not really named until way later in the book. And they're basically, oh, I've got a better dumb way to die story than you do sort of a thing. And they're telling them and stuff. And we get Jack Ryder's and I'm like, well, okay. Vicky's seemed even more far-fetched. Steve's, he's the sports reporter for WGBS or whatever, and not known for storytelling. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
It's like, this happened, the guy died. Yeah. At which point, Clark apparently is in the room and he's like, I don't find any of this funny.
That's funny.
But the whole setup started such that I was expecting the point of this issue was going to be, we're going to have a 3, 4, or 5 page story from each of these people. Build up. Okay, here's what happened. And then something at the end to tie it all together.
Okay.
So for it to be just in a page or two and then bam, we're moving on. I'm like, what was the point?
What's going on here? What was this exercise?
It turns out Superman had looked into the deaths, found nothing. All of this ties into the person who is going to be the villain of the arc for the next few issues. But we also set up Inspector Henderson. In this case, it's Billy with an I, Henderson, which is the daughter of the legendary Inspector Bill Henderson, who's predominantly known from the Adventures of Superman radio show and television series. So if you've ever watched the black and white, which later went into color, TV series.
Yeah.
The Bill Henderson, that inspector that Clark's always going to, that's the character they're referencing, and it's his daughter. Anyways.
All right.
They set her up for no particular reason. They set up the Mannheim crime family is back, only so we have somebody to hire said villain of the arc. And the whole point is this villain is trying to kill people in a way that not only kills them, but makes them a complete and utter joke, so nobody would ever take him seriously again. So killing their reputation as well.
Okay. All right.
Not a bad idea. This character has a connection to an established Superman villain. In a kind of a weird way, because it's kind of sharing the code name with that character. And I'm like, why? We get I can't even call it a subplot, but a digression to Mr. McSpidelik, or however you pronounce that, showing up at the Steelworks campus in Smallville to talk to John Kent. warning John that Master TXYZ, because of course you can't have pronounceable names these days, who's the fourth dimensional demon, is coming. And he has been, he is, and he will forever be your greatest enemy. It's like, okay, we've got to go pull up a big enemy for John Kent out of nowhere. Great, got it. And then we cut back to the killer making another attempt. He'd been trying to kill Perry White, because that's who the Mannheim game hired him to kill, because he's now the mayor. And it ends with Clark on the nightly news. So apparently, and maybe I hadn't been paying enough attention, but apparently he's back working at WGBS, maybe in addition to the Daily Planet or the Daily Planet's televised. I don't know. But comparing this new villain, and we're seeing this happening on the TV. The villain's like, oh, he's going to compare me to the Joker. It's like, no, he compares him to the Central City's trickster, which really ticks the guy off. And he's like, I've got to kill Clark Kent now. Okay. Acceptable setup for a new villain. I think the choices they made with the new villain, who he's connected to, what his abilities are, I'm not sure I agree with most of those.
Okay.
Not saying they were wrong, but whatever. We then open the next issue with Clark on the news again, ridiculing this guy, saying, well, because he can't land the jokes. The police have ruled out the trickster, the puzzler, and these other people, which again, he's just trying to get under this guy's skin and succeed. We get some stuff with the person who hired the killer and the killer. You know, they're at odds now because, well, the job's not getting done. We cut to John Kent for a few minutes. He gets stuck in a time pocket by this villain of his. And it's like they're trying to tell a story with John Kent, but they're not really starting because that's going to be the next arc. But they're spending enough time in it in this arc that I'm like, why?
You're like, what is this for?
Yeah. And then we get the whole resolution kind of sort of with the villain, who hired them, why Perry's not going to die, and all of that kind of sort of works, kind of sort of doesn't. And it seemed to be an attempt to basically establish a new Superman villain. And by new, it was a very clear, I don't say copy of, but a new version of an existing villain to run in parallel with the existing villain.
Okay. All right.
And I made a point of not mentioning the character name. I do feel even if I did, there are a lot of people who would still say who, because it's not like it's a, you know, Lex Luthor level Superman villain. Granted, very few characters are.
Yeah.
We hit issue 11. Now we get Superman Jr. fighting this fourth dimensional demon who has time manipulation powers. And he's trying to basically belittle John of, hey, you're not going to amount to anything in the grand scheme of things because I know all of time. John's like, I'm not doing it for the fame and the glory. I'm doing it to do the right thing. Because, you know, he was raised by Superman. Go figure. And he dons the identity of Tomorrow Man. You know, Superman, the man of tomorrow. Okay, fine. And this fifth dimensional demon realized he's essentially, quote unquote, paradoxed himself by turning John into the version of John that is in his final battle with him. So it's like he's trying to basically defeat the younger version of his enemy, but turns him into the version that's going to defeat him, is the implication.
Yeah, you created the monster by doing that.
Exactly. But instead of fighting Tomorrow Man, he, quote unquote, gives him a gift, and we end on a reveal here. And I don't want to give this away, although it might be clear from subsequent covers, because we wind up with another character essentially teaming up with Tomorrow Man for the next few issues.
Okay.
I'm like, this is actually really interesting. The more I read, the more I feel they had to potentially cheat to set it up.
Okay.
I'm wondering, can they land the ending on this?
Well, hopefully they can, but yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either. In number 12, we go back to that city of all the kryptonite that they had in the first arc.
Yeah.
It now not only has the kryptonite, it's got the technology of Krypton.
Oh, okay. So their technology's ramped up.
Well, they seem to literally have Kryptonian technology. Not that they've ramped up, but they've acquired.
Okay, all right.
Not that this really goes anywhere. Because they also, as the ramifications, at this point, Superman is gone. So the market for kryptonite's kind of gone down. But he's like, hey, we can use it for other things. Like science, I guess.
Like what?
Cut to people experimenting on Bebo the monkey and injecting him with some kind of kryptonite serum.
Oh, nice. Poor monkey.
Bebo meets Bibbo. Bibbo is the guy who runs the Ace of Clubs. He's got a food truck now.
Okay, so the monkey's meeting the guy.
Yeah. And we then pause that, because that'll be for the next issue. We go back to Tomorrow Man and the guy he's pairing up with. They, and this is where I got really, really confused and continue to be confused as to when exactly is this taking place? Because it sure seems to be present day, but the implication is Tomorrow Man isn't from now. And Tomorrow Man is trying to, and this is again, John Kent, trying to hide his identity from Batman, good luck with that, the Damian Wayne Robin, his best friend, good luck with that, and Lois, a world-class reporter, and his mother, good luck with that.
Oh, that's funny.
And it's at a point where it looks like Tomorrow Man's going to go off to his native time period, which, again, is the present day, yet this is or isn't that, I don't know, but there's a reason for him to stay.
Interesting.
We then have a scene at the end with Damian in the Batcave working on a weapon because he doesn't trust this other guy. Okay, we're going to have a showdown. Got it. Great. Don't worry, that's not the next issue. The next issue, we go back to the monkey.
The monkey. Okay, all right, we're back at the monkey, who's been injected with a kryptonite serum that's going to do God knows what.
Yeah. Now, Bebo the monkey is classically Super Monkey.
God.
So I knew where this was going. He's going to wind up with Superman-like powers. Bebo is a huge Superman fan, so he puts a Superman t-shirt on the guy, yada, yada. Things happen with the powers because of the experimentation. He goes after the guys who experimented with him. Tomorrow Man and his new buddy fight, then help Bebo. And this is where Tomorrow Man starts to realize his new friend might not be exactly who he thinks he is.
Wow.
We then get to 14, the last of the issues I've read, which again, still seems to be set in the present day of the DC Universe. And his friend is asking questions that kind of confuse Tomorrow Man. Like, wait, why are you asking that? And I'm like, is he thinking this? Is he thinking that? Or whatever. And ends on a reveal of who his friend is. And this, again, goes back to the Batcave, where Damian had been trying to figure out. Batman comes in. It's like, have you figured it out yet? Because I got the one piece of information you don't that might clue you in. He gives it and says, ah, of course, is for Damian. And I'm like, wait. You're saying this happened in this other thing at this point. I don't know that enough time has elapsed. And certainly, even if certain things had happened that would have needed to have happened to make this happen, it doesn't explain the scene at the end of number 11 of how Tomorrow Man meets this other person.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, that's interesting.
Convoluted?
Yeah.
And a number of times it's like, oh, I think you're going to tell the story. No, you're not. You set it up, but you didn't follow through.
That's funny.
And it's not bad, but it sure as hell isn't great.
That's disappointing. It doesn't make me want to go out and read it.
Yeah, yeah. And I really, from the covers, this is the one that looked more interesting of all of the Reign of the Superboys, and one of the reasons I wanted to go start reading those arcs. But if they land it how I think they're going to land it, and I they've telegraphed it such that they almost can't go any other way, I'm like, it's not a bad reveal, but it's a bad story, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
You get to where it's like, oh, this is what we have now as a tool in the toolbox or a toy to play with in the universe or whatever, however you want to phrase that. But there were better ways to get to that point than...
Yeah, they did it a bad way.
Not so much a bad way, but an inexplicable way.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Because if this person is really B, why were they claiming to be A the whole time?
Yeah,
that doesn't, that's not good. They can't sell me on that. And I think they're going to have a hard time. That's where it falls apart.
Well, that's unfortunate, but you saved me some reading. So thank you. I steered you away from something you never would have read, and you steered me away from something that I would thought about reading.
If they land it, I will suggest you read it.
All right.
If they land it.
All right. That's a big if.
Because this has the potential to really do some stuff that I think has ramifications on some things you would find interesting.
All right. Well, keep me posted. More to come.
Will do, but I don't know how soon I'll get around to reading that next issue, because if it's clear it's the end of the arc, maybe I'll circle back to a few of those things next month, or I don't know. But we'll see.
All right. Well, on to my next pick.
Yeah.
All right. I read something that, once again, John, I do not hate you with my choices. You know how, like, I did ranks, which is pretty... The next one was essentially like a horror comic. It was called The War, and it was originally in a Boom anthology, like a horror anthology.
Mm-hmm.
And it was by Garth Ennis and Becky Cloonan. She was the artist, and they collaborated. And this is one of the darkest books I've read in a long time. And I've read dark books before, you know, like mm-hmm. horror books or things that are... But this one had weight to it because it felt real. And I kind of mentioned it a little bit that I was going to look into this last monthly comic spotlight. So July, I read it. So the start is such a strong hook. That's what hooked me on the comic. I read that first thing in the anthology. I'm like, I got to circle back on this.
Mm-hmm.
So you got intellectuals discussing, as they do, political affairs. You know, everyone's an expert. and trying to show how smart they are. And they're talking about the Ukraine and Russia war. And they're going on and on about who started it, how it started. It didn't just start in a vacuum in 2022. And it went to the Cuban Missile Crisis and blah, blah, blah. And how the West was involved in the Ukraine war. It was true. CIA operatives were there on the ground. MI6 was there, you know, stoking tensions when there was a different president who was there before and overthrown in a coup. But anyways, whatever. This is the stuff they're talking about. So we've seen this happen. And they're like, but nuclear war is what keeps everyone from going too far because the effects are so dire. Nobody's going to push the button because they know civilization is over. And so that's kind of like everyone's drinking their wine. They all go home and we're on one couple and they wake up to a text. London's gone. That's the text. Oh, London's gone. And then it proceeds. Well, one of our cities, one of theirs, it has to stop now. And so what do you do? And so it digs into people's fears. Will they hit? Are you prepared?
Mm-hmm.
Then you get to scenes of people who were in this group and where they were when the nuclear war kicked off. Some were caught in a subway. Some people were in a car caught in a street. Other people stayed where they were. You know, stay where you are. Don't go outside. What is the correct thing to do? And one of the characters is pregnant. So you get the whole thinking about the future and what's going on right now. And a lot of like you talk one way. And perhaps when the time comes, you act in a different way than what you said.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the dark things, but it's not gruesome. Like at one scene, it was like kind of haunting. Somebody's in a car and you just can see a faint outline and they're talking to someone and hey, you know, they're trapped. They're buried in rubble in a car. Someone digs their way to them and he's holding their hand and, you know, it's going on and on. I can't remember the lady's name. Hey, you know, thank you for being here with me. You got to save yourself. Da, 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 da. They're going back and forth. And at some point, he realizes that's not who he thought it was. He's holding their hand. He's like, you're not this person. And they're like, no. And he's like, can you just stay with me until I die? And it's just like creepy the way it plays out. It's like, It gives you the heebie-jeebies. And so there are some things that are horrifying. There's one scene that I would say is a little bit grotesque. Well, not overall, it's not a graphic book. And I would say this is a book that is the stuff of nightmares because you can see it happening. And we're on the precipice many times in history. And we've been on the precipice recently of nuclear war with Russia and us and Ukraine. It's just very scary that the press of one button or an accident that is made, lives can change forever.
And not just lives. I think planets at that point.
Yeah, planets. Hours. Yeah.
I don't care if Mars or Venus gets toasted a little bit or whatever. They're fine. They're far enough away or whatever. But this one, I'm kind of vested in the fate of this planet.
Exactly. But I mean, if you want a horror book that's not gruesome, except for the very last scene is a little grotesque, it was fantastic. And it has a creepy feel. It left you feeling like, oh, this could really happen.
Now, was this a trade paperback or hardcover?
It's a trade paperback I sell now, but it came out as an anthology. But you can pick it up as a trade paperback and it's called The War. It's Garth Ennis and Becky Cloonan. Yeah. Very, very good stuff.
Interesting. Interesting. He's a good writer.
He is. When he is on, he's very good. When he is in his Garth Ennis, I'm going to be weird and kooky type stuff, he can be a little bit off-putting at times, I think. But this was him in peak form, I think.
I'll be honest. I don't think there's a lot of his work that I have read, either because he's off in the areas that I don't want to go into, or he's telling, I don't say more down-to-earth, but a less out-there kind of a story. And he's very, very good at his job. And the places he takes the stories is not places I need my mind to go.
Yeah. This book leaves you feeling like worried and scared.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, you feel that weight. You're like, oh, that was dark. And it's done well. It's just not probably the way you want to feel coming out of a book.
Yeah. When I was in college, I took it must have been a world history course, something of that sort. And one of the things they wanted all the students to do was to prepare a plan for nuclear war. Somebody launches, what do you do? And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And there was software to go simulate the whole thing and all of this stuff.
You're like, oh God.
For my mind, particularly at that point in my life, to me, it was a no-brainer as to what you do. You launch everything you've got.
Yeah.
You evenly disperse it, and we don't let this race of ours contaminate the rest of the universe. It's about the only choice there.
We're done. Yeah.
Because nobody wins a nuclear war.
Nobody does. Even if you, quote unquote, win, there's no future. It's over. It's done. Irradiated.
You're better off doing a mercy killing of everybody, I think. Not that I really think that should happen, but, I mean, we've watched enough post-apocalyptic movies and stuff to know life's not going to be pretty on the other side.
Yeah, speaking of which, we'll be reading Geiger in the future.
That's true. That's true.
All right, let's put our big boy pants on. We got some reading to do.
That's funny.
Yeah.
All right, my next one?
Yeah.
I am going to go with Justice League Unlimited 15 to 20 plus a bonus issue I'll toss in there because I thought it was related. This is another one where I'm picking up back in January, so we've got some DC KO tie-ins. We were in the middle of the Terrific 10 arc, I think it was, where Mr. Terrific has led a group of time-lost characters into hell ostensibly to go negotiate with Neron, because it's like, yeah, negotiating with the devil, that's a good plan. I did not think this was particularly accessible. Now, granted, it was the middle of an arc, not that that's any excuse, but so many of these characters that were time lost, again, I am now time lost by 8 or 9 months. I couldn't remember, wait, who were they supposed to be? Who is in this Batman Beyond suit? Is it Terry McGinnis? No, apparently not. I think it's Tim Drake. As if I'm going to remember that with nothing in the issue to clue me in until it's a little late in the story. And because that was issues 15 and 16. And by the end of it, it almost seemed like, I forget if it was the 10 Little Indians or whatever it was, but there's a story where you start with 10 people and people just start getting killed off one by one by one by one until you're done.
Ah, okay.
I think it's like an Agatha Christie story originally or some such.
All right.
And that's more or less what was happening here. Only one character survives. It was not overly satisfying. And it's like, that's where they chose to go. Okay, maybe the next arc will be better. It starts the villain amnesty stuff.
Oh, okay.
And we start with the new Justice Leaguers, Lex Luthor, Starro, and Giganta. Yeah, whatever. We also have a bit to deal with all of the damage from the KO tournament. Earth magically heals from all of that to its previous form. That's convenient.
Yeah, no kidding.
We have people returning from the KO tournament. They're all having visions. This issue was actually something I should have read before I read the Action comic stuff last month.
Ah, okay. All right. That's all right.
This is where the Justice League debriefs after the KO event. We learn about the visions. We find out Superman is missing. And then we spend a little bit of time with some villains of Keystone City. They didn't get transported back to Iron Heights. They're off causing trouble, it looks like. But really, they're not taking down that bridge. They're trying to stabilize it and help out. And shame on the heroes for not having given them a chance to redeem themselves at the end of the world. So this is what leads to the quote-unquote full and unconditional amnesty offer. No conditions whatsoever. I'm like, really? Not even a revoke it if they go back to being evil? Okay, fine. That's where we leave that issue. Next issue, 18, we come in, and now it's the supervillain amnesty pilot program. It has conditions. They got to behave themselves. People like the Joker and the ones they know aren't going to follow, they don't even get the offer. Every villain gets a parole officer, although that's kind of nebulous, and they can't act without supervision.
Yeah.
And they are irradiated with something to where they can be sent to the Phantom Zone instantly if needed. Oh, and the program's top secret, we can't tell the public. So the no strings attached thing from the previous issue, yeah, not the case.
That's funny. All right.
We start learning about some of the visions. Guy Gardner is off to become the quote-unquote Pope of the Green Lantern Corps, and he is taking what seems to be a spherical quote-unquote power bank that has samples of everyone's superpowers off to Oa, because this is what would have been able to fix things after, what was the previous event, Absolute Power, where everybody's stuff gets shuffled around or whatever it was, where we had Fire and Ice switching powers.
Yeah.
This sampling would have given them the information and the signatures they needed to fix it. Okay, fine. Okay. He's going off with Mr. Terrific, Hawkgirl, and Metamorpho, which coincidentally is the same group we had in that Superman movie. Not that the Superman movie is influencing the direction the comics go in whatsoever, but, you know, hey, we've got Booster Gold, Martian Manhunter, and Mary Marvel going off looking for Superman. They take Booster's time bubble, immediately encounter Epoch, and of course that leads into the whole Action Comics arc I talked about last month.
I remember that.
We end this issue with Lex publicly announcing the supervillain amnesty project, much to Batman's chagrin. Following week after this is the Justice League Intergalactic Special. That's that bonus issue I told you I'd do. It's a space adventure for a couple of Justice Leaguers and Dreamer. It was co-written by Nicole Maines, who's actually doing a fairly good job shepherding the path of her character in the DC Universe. So more power to her for that. it was not as accessible as I would have liked. They've got some dog flying a spaceship and there's some story behind it. I don't know what and don't care. This sort of served as a prequel to the Justice League Dream Girls, a DC Pride event weekly series that they did, I guess, after this.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
So when it ends on a, and they collapse to go into there or whatever, it's like, yeah, okay, this was a sales pitch. I get back to the Justice League Unlimited with number 19. We get the Revenge of the Brainiac Queen storyline starting up. And we've got Jack Ryder, who is the Creeper, Livewire, both of which are technically Justice Leaguers, and they are doing a quote-unquote podcast. Now, as a longtime podcaster, I always get a little chagrined, annoyed, whatever, when people use the term podcast in a really funny way. Like, they're sitting in a full TV newsroom-looking studio doing a InfoWars sort of thing and calling that a podcast.
That's not a podcast.
It's not.
They have some people who do video things and turn that into a podcast, basically release the audio, but that's not a podcast.
Well, technically, you can do a video podcast. What makes it a podcast, though, is the RSS feed.
Yes.
So you could do a PDF podcast, I guess, if you really wanted to. I don't know anyone who'd bother with that still. But when people basically do a TV show or an interview show on YouTube or whatever and say it's a podcast, it's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Yeah.
That's fun.
We have plot shenanigans that turn a Justice Leaguer essentially into the Brainiac Queen. And I'm like, well, that's really weird. And then the next issue, the final one of the batch I read, it's really split into two parts. We've got Guy Gardner, Mr. Terrific, Hawkgirl, and Metamorpho out in space on an alien planet where the power bank has exploded and all of the alien animals now have superpowers and are attacking. And the Justice League's trying to go fight Brainiac Queen, and Lex does Lex stuff. So it was okay, but it was all over the map. It really, I think, could have and should have been a lot more accessible. And it's starting to feel like DC is sort of trying to do the standard trade paperback arcs, but now almost doing a bunch of disconnected things inside of them and trying to phrase things as part one, because I think issue 19 was listed as Amnesty Part 1 and issue 20 was Escape from Power Planet Part 1. It's like, are they flipping parts, alternating books? They're not. It's like, I think they are realizing that the way they've been packaging stories is turning people off and cutting sales, and they're not necessarily changing the storytelling that much, but they're changing the titling of the stories to make it seem like they are.
That's funny. Like, the title's the problem.
Yeah.
Well, that's almost depressing.
And it's not working for me.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Unfortunate.
All right. So what's your next one?
All right. My next one, I didn't do like big blocks of comics. I kind of dipped in. I went on the Marvel app and I saw they released Daredevil number one, a brand new number one. I was like, oh, I didn't know Daredevil was getting relaunched. I don't know anything that's going on. I'm out of the loop. And it's by Stephanie Phillips. And so most of the time, Stephanie Phillips, I enjoy stuff that she does. So I'm like, yeah, I'll give it a try. So the story was written fine. Parts of it felt a little bit formulaic. And this may sound a little bit like an old man, get off my lawn type thing. But I feel like I've read the story before. And what I mean by that is it's the origin is retold with caption boxes, which makes it a very good jumping on point for Daredevil number one.
Mm-hmm.
You get a small action sequence, very Spider-Man-esque or Daredevil-esque, like swinging around, doing stuff. And then it flipped. And then the one thing that I was like, where'd this come from? Matt is a law professor now. So he's not a lawyer. He was a law professor.
Not a bad choice for him, though.
Yeah, not a bad choice. Splash internet. So I don't know where that happened, but I was like, cool, he's a professor now and talking with kids and everything. And then we get a little bit of a hook for the arc, which is there's a death. Trophies were taken from the dead bodies. Mysterious new bad is introduced. We don't know who it is, which we see that all the time in comics. And it was good. I enjoyed it. It left me, okay, cool. I want to read this. But at the same time, I felt like I've read like five or six comics with this exact same stuff with a different character.
Yeah.
And that's not bad. It's just that I've read a lot of comics and you have too. It wasn't anything new. It was executed well. But you come out of feeling like, oh, I read this when Tom Taylor set up that other character. I read this over here. So you get a little bit of that. But if you're a Daredevil fan, not a bad jumping on point. It was good. It was solid. That is the old man get off my lawn. I've read too much of this stuff that I've read stories like this before.
There's a way to tell a story that feels like it's intrinsic to the character and a way where it feels like you're just borrowing the character to tell your story.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And sometimes there's a thin line between the two.
Yeah, I felt like they could have stuck Nightwing in here. They could have stuck 10 other characters in this comic and essentially rinse, repeat, different character.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not bad. That's the weird thing. It wasn't bad. I was like, oh, I would have given it like a B+. But at the same time, I'm like, eh, there's nothing exciting, new, fresh.
Yeah, yeah.
It was that weird thing. But if you want a jumping on point, I would say it's a good jumping on point for Daredevil.
That's good to know. At some point, I need to go figure out where I jumped off Daredevil.
Yeah.
And then if I can find a weekend or whatever where I've got nothing but time to read, maybe go from there and catch up.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of it out there because I think you dropped it a couple of years back at least.
Oh, years and years and years ago.
Oh, okay.
There's multiple volumes, I think, of it. Now, granted, that doesn't say much because sometimes the volume's 10 issues, it feels like, but there's definitely a fair amount to read. Now, the question I would have is how much of that makes sense without reading all of the other books it may have crossed over into for various events or story arcs or what have you.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's some of it you really don't need to go back and reread.
Yeah.
I would say Stephanie Phillips, and I'd want to go back to find out where he became a professor. Or maybe that's just a new thing in this comic. I don't know.
They should either make it clear through context that this is a new status quo for him as of here, or give a footnote as to, if you want to find out more, here's when he did this.
Yeah. Oh, Matt became a professor back in volume 63, because I don't know how many volumes there have been.
There was a point in time where all the publishers did this, but I think in the Marvel context, it almost felt like Stan and the rest of the editorial bullpen were your friends, and they were just trying to catch you up on something you missed, not knocking you for missing it, but just, you know, this is what happened at this point, this is why this is going on, what have you. And that seems to have stopped for writers long since.
I agree, yeah.
And I can't tell you how many times I've gotten to something, it's like, well, wait a sec, I don't get this. And I'm not saying you're wrong, but you're pulling on a piece of continuity that I am totally oblivious to, and that's hampering my enjoyment of the story because it's running afoul of what I thought the status quo was. And you're not telling me if you're changing it or just assuming I should know, and it's very off-putting because you're not including me in the story experience.
That's exactly correct. They used to write in a manner where every comic was somebody's first comic, and this is my first Daredevil in easily a year, probably. And yeah, I was a little bit, I don't know where this happened, and nothing was told to me why. Not even a little text box or anything. So The art is lost upon us. It's from a different time, a different era.
Yeah, yeah. Back when comics sold, I think.
Yeah.
All right. My last one, and this goes back to how we talked about having gotten shipments from Cowabunga.
Yeah.
One of the things I got was the final issue I had ordered of John Le Carre's The Circus Losing Control.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
So, since I've got it, it's like, let's finish off this series. And we were just talking about how characters aren't getting introduced, whatever. So many times in this story, they would get to a new scene, we've got a new character. The first thing they do is there's a caption. Here's the character's name. Here's one line about the character, just to give a little context. And then in the scene itself, we learn more about what does this character do in this agency? Who are they? All of that stuff. So some of it, yeah, is maybe exposition, but some of it would be done, I think, in a movie TV show as voiceover from the lead character perspective. So it feels like we're being shown in stuff, aspects of the character as we go, not punished for not knowing who everybody is off the bat.
Yeah.
And there's a ton of characters in this story because it's around the person in charge of the agency having gone missing and the person who's, I was going to say the secretary, but really there's a lot more that this person does beyond that. She's one of the quote-unquote mothers in this organization that have a certain level of responsibility and control in the agency. And the lead character here isn't sure if the guy who's missing, is she saving her boss from something he's gotten in too thick? Has he turned on the agency? You know, what's going on? And there are enough twists and turns in the story that it looks like it could go either way at multiple points.
Okay, cool.
And again, we've got lots of other people in the agency involved. There's a who can you trust, who can you not? And it's a good spy story. And I felt it end in a very satisfying manner that Matt Kent, the writer, if they wanted to continue with this, I would certainly suggest going with it. I enjoyed this story, and I am not steeped in the John Le Carre spy stuff whatsoever.
That's really cool. You know what? Matt Kent is a writer that I really enjoy, and I really think he could do some cool things over at the Big Two.
Mm-hmm.
But he's one of those guys who swore off, I'm never writing for Marvel and DC. And he's one of the few, not that they're rare unicorns, he's been very successful, never really doing Marvel and DC. He's done a lot of different things. He's done Boom, he's done Image, he's done everything you can think out there, Dark Horse comics, but he's never done the big two, and he said he never would. And I think he's one of those personalities where he doesn't conform, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But him being a nonconformist and he thinks a little different, I find his comics are just very interesting, very fascinating the way he writes. He's a really talented writer, and for whatever reason, doesn't want to write Spider-Man and Batman, more power to him. Do what you want to do.
Yeah, yeah. But this level of spycraft would be very interesting under the guise of either S.H.I.E.L.D. or Checkmate or whatever inside the Marvel DC universe.
Yeah, yeah. I love everything that he does. When I say everything, most of his comics, if he's writing it, when I read them, I'm like, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. He's a top shelf writer, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was satisfied with this miniseries.
Very cool, man. Good one in and on. Over to me?
Yeah, what's your last one?
All right. I went back and forth. I was going to talk about Geiger, but I don't want to spoil it because we're going to read Geiger in the future together.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to do Conan because we did that before. I'm going to talk about another Geoff Johns. I'm going to talk about Rook Exodus number 10.
Okay.
So Rook, this is before they got rid of Image on the app, is back, or it was back. It's not on Global Comics right now, but it was. And with issue 10, I would say one thing. Rook is world building at its finest. Geoff Johns is the writer, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot going on. Essentially, what happened is the company that created the world engine for this planet and the warden helmet. The mythology behind the warden helmets is there's people who are wardens. Think of them as game wardens. They put on a helmet, and if I'm wearing the wolf helmet, I can communicate with the wolves on the planet.
Right, right.
Rook, blackbirds, crows. I didn't know they were called rooks until I read this. I thought it was something with chess. So anyways, so they put on the helmet. They want the tech back. So they had sent this character, Ursula, who was a bear warden, and he's Russian, to basically kill off the other warden. And that was what we had happened up until now. Now what has moved on is Rook and his allies are going after another warden called Wild Dog. Now, another thing with these warden helmets, if you wear them for too long, you can essentially go crazy. And what I mean by you go crazy, you link to these animals, you start thinking and behaving like an animal. You feel the emotions, the thought patterns that they have, you start thinking like a wild dog in this case. Mm-hmm. And so he becomes kind of feral. They are trying to get this guy. You're like, why are they going after this feral warden who's wearing this wild dog helmet? Because he was an engineer and he can restart the world engine. And they're trying to save the planet because the company and all the people have fled and these wardens are behind there and they're trying to save what's left of the planet before it implodes. And there's this other character, they call him the Spider Warden. He's trying to kill everyone. So he's just bad too.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I'm giving you a lot. There's a character called Bighorn, and his dad is the Wild Dog. So Bighorn is Wild Dog's son. And so they're trying to rip the helmet off him, get him to help out. And there's a lot of family drama that ensues in here. And are they able to save him? Are they able to save the planet? That's the direction of this. And if I had to guess, there's a ton of meat on the bone. But I think if they're able to save Wild Dog and work on the world engine, that might be the path that they take to kind of wrap the series up, because he seems like he's more focused on the whole Geigerverse, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. I think between Geiger, Redcoat, and the Junkyard Joe stuff, there seems more going on with the unnamed stuff than... And have they even named what the Rook Exodus world is?
They really kind of haven't. They said the name of it, and I can't remember what it was called, but it seems so separate and so different. It's something he likes to go in and dabble with every now and then. So it seems like it's being set up to close it in this arc, and then it's something he could go back and toy with in the future, you know, with the toys.
Interesting.
But it's a good read. It's really sci-fi. It's a lot of fun. But the feeling I get coming out of this is he's building up to this 6-issue arc to come to a conclusion with the... I'm going to guess save the planet and save themselves. That's what I'm going to say. I don't know. It could go on for another 36 issues for all I know.
Well, the timing on that would be interesting because I think they've released 3 issues of the Ghost Machine official guidebook.
Correct.
And I think the 4th one is going to deal with Rook Exodus. So if that were to time out around the time that that series kind of wraps up, that would be convenient.
Yeah, it would be. It's a good read. It's the one that personally, I just enjoy the most because it's fun to me. World building and having these really sci-fi things with these people putting on helmets and communicating with animals. I've had a ton of fun with it. But at the same time, I love post-apocalyptic sci-fi, which is essentially what we're getting with Geiger. And Junkyard Joe was cool as heck because the first appearance of Junkyard Joe, I think, was in the Vietnam War, which I kind of love Vietnam. So it's really cool. I've been digging everything that's been going on over at Ghost Machine.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to diving into the unnamed stuff. And they had enough material there for 2 issues of the guidebook. The third's on the Unbelievables, fourth on Rook Exodus, and then fifth on Hyde Street, which is more of their, I guess, horror-type stuff.
Yeah, I read another issue of Hyde Street, and it got me excited. It made me want to go back and get caught up. I read that, too, because I knew Image was going away, so I went and I read the last issue of Hyde Street. I'm like, man, I got to get caught up with this, because it's all fun stuff. The horror would be the one you wouldn't like the most.
Yeah, yeah. I do think Image leaving Global Comics is a definite blow to Global Comics. Because there was some discussion on the Slack channel on how it kind of lowers the appeal of the digital experience.
It really does.
It does, but I'm also feeling the same way over on Marvel because it's taken so damn long for them to build up enough to be worth reading.
Yeah, Marvel, it doesn't sound like much, that 3-month delay, but in my opinion, the 3-month delay is killer because we were pre-ordering essentially almost 3 months ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you waited, you read some stuff. Then you had no solicits. Then you got to wait 3 months. You forget what was going on. You really just can't remember. And then you have to wait, like, let's say you're waiting till maybe 4 or 5 issues built up.
Well, to the end of an arc.
An end of
an
arc.
They're not clearly labeling.
Exactly. So that could be 9, 10 months from now trying to pick back up. And that's too long. They're on to the next volume, the next writer at that point. And you're perpetually lost. Whereas DC, a month is somewhat relevant.
Yeah. Well, I was able to read last month the Avengers stuff and finish off that run. I'm waiting for the end of a Captain America arc, which might be for next month. I'm not sure. It depends, again, when the issues get up there. I'm still waiting for that final issue of the Planet of the Apes versus Fantastic Four. And I'm still waiting for them to get all of the Ultimate Universe stuff up there.
Yeah. Yeah. The Ultimate Universe stuff, I dipped into it just to see like the Ultimate Endgame stuff that was starting to trickle out. And what I saw, I think Ultimate Endgame was on there. It wasn't very good.
Well, they've got an issue or two, but it's like 5 issues. I'll wait for the 5.
Yeah, exactly. Because I just dipped in just to check it out, and I was just like, ugh. It made me not want to even wait around. Just my experience with the first issue of it. I was like, that's not worth it.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully it's better, but I read the first issue. I'm like, I don't want to read any more of this. I'm good.
Yeah, I think they could have handled things a little better, and certainly availability is a serious issue, I think, impacting my reading and stuff. Now, granted, I'm sure somebody's out there saying I could be diving into all the different libraries, finding some stuff there, maybe. Well, some of it, yes, some of it, no. Some of it, I'm waiting for it to just become available digitally. And some people are saying, well, you could still go buy it, I was going to say, on Comixology, but that's dead and gone. But through Kindle and stuff, yeah, I just don't want to pay for digital on a per-issue basis. I don't think the pricing makes sense.
No, it's expensive because you have nothing. And at any time, the server goes down and you've lost all your data, or they change the licensing agreement and you don't really own those things.
And Neon Ichiban, which is made by the people who did Comixology, has started up, but it's a buy the issue at a $2.99 or whatever kind of a price point. And I'm like, no thanks.
I think the only model that makes sense on the digital side for me, Hoopla is a godsend, and I just got to go get my library card. Because that's going to be the way to go with Image leaving Global Comics. But I think the all-you-can-eat model, the Netflix model,
yeah,
is the one that works. And if you're trying to do $3 an issue, forget it. It's a non-starter for me.
I'm not crazy about the subscription thing in terms of when you end, you've got nothing. But until then, you have everything.
Yep.
And that's the part I'm liking. And one of the things I'm thinking about reading is the Reign of the Superboys arc in Supergirl. Not that I would have been picking up Supergirl had I still been buying comics.
Yeah.
But since it costs me nothing to read it on the DC app because I've already paid for the app, I'll probably go ahead and do that.
Yeah, you're more willing, I feel like I'm more willing to dip in and take a risk reading a comic because there's no financial cost to it when you've already paid for the year.
Reading one you've already paid for, there's no financial cost. I think you're more likely to avoid something that you would have to explicitly pay for to go read.
Yeah, before we were going in blind based on a solicit, based on a name, based on a cover art, mm-hmm. maybe some interior pages if you wanted to do some research, which I wasn't doing any of that. And I was way more skeptical because if you didn't enjoy it, I felt like I was stuck with 2 to 3 months worth of this thing. So I was like, all right, if it doesn't have Jonathan Hickman or it doesn't have Jason Aaron or if it doesn't have artist A or B, I'm out. I don't want to try that because it's too expensive to try. And yeah. Now I'm more like, oh, I'll jump in and try it. But at the same time, I'm a little bit, I didn't like it. On to the next.
Certainly the comics were expensive. I guess the part that got me was the risk-reward ratio, or the number of hits versus misses, I guess, is the better way to phrase it.
Yeah.
I feel right now there are very few hits in comics and a lot more misses.
I am feeling that too, and I think that's scary if you're buying the issues, because I'm able to sample a lot, you're able to sample a lot, and if you're enjoying a third of the stuff that you're reading and two-thirds, that's not very good. Imagine if you had the full price or even at the discount, and plus you had all that storage and the boxes and the bags.
Mm-hmm.
That leads to the sense of frustration, which makes people maybe one day rage quit. I'm out of here. I'm done with this. I don't know.
But better stories would help. More accessible stories would help.
Yep.
And I think being a little clearer, I was saying the solicits, but I mean, I'm not even looking at solicits these days. As much as I want to blame marketing for some of this, it's more of a problem on the follow through and the what I have chosen to read isn't working for me, regardless of why I've chosen to read it.
Yeah.
That's where I think they've really messed up.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. This has been interesting. I've enjoyed our journey into digital, and there's already some tumultuous stuff with Image and Global Comics, but I'm not going to change. It made me want to go check out Hoopla.
Yeah.
And Hoopla is something that Chris Myers swears on. And if it's what I think it is, it won't be the single issues. It'll be trades that I'll be picking up on Hoopla.
Yeah, I think in Hoopla that makes more sense.
And I'm fine with that. That's like going and reading 6 issues back to back. Just pick up this trade from my local library. There we go.
It avoids the problem of, do I get the complete story or not? You know you should.
Yeah. And if not, they need to repackage this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So on that note, I do want to mention the book club.
Yeah.
This episode should go up on August 10th and on August 20th from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time. We're planning on getting together and hanging out on Zoom. Now, there is no book this time. There's just the club part. So we're just going to hang out and catch up on stuff. So there already is a link up on the Slack channel and the book club channel. So if you're going to attend, if you think you're going to attend, reply to that post if you plan on coming, or if you can't make it and you're one of the regulars, just so we know. But again, it's been a little while since we've had one of these. Part of that is I've just been swamped on stuff and I haven't had time to organize anything. Life's getting a little bit more predictable now. So at the very least, we're going to do a hangout and then we'll see if we can get the book club back up and going. And part of that may come down to who all attends this and what do people really want to be reading, and do I have the time to do that, or if somebody else is going to step up and help organize again, stuff like that. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you August 20th.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we see a lot of you guys that are listening.
Yeah, hopefully, because there are a lot of people who don't want to come because, oh, I haven't read the book or whatever. Well, that's not an excuse this time. If you can't make it, you can't make it. If you don't want to come, you don't want to come. That's fine. But if you want to come and haven't done it because you haven't read the book, don't like that book, whatever, that's off the table now. We're just going to get together and hang out.
Hang out with your friends. Hang out with your buddies.
Yeah. Yeah. So cool. Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, forum, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayo. And thanks again for listening.